calling this special meeting of the Board of Trustees of the Canotillo Independent School District. The date is December 6, 2012. The time is 7:01. Tony, can you please call roll?
Mr. Coronado?
Here.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mr. Medina?
Here.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Here.
Mrs. Quintana?
Here.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Present.
Mrs. Searles?
Here.
Through the chair. President, I just want to welcome everyone tonight and let everyone know on your dais, you have an invitation to tomorrow night's fall music showcase. We do this every year, of course, at the holiday season. It's actually this year going to be in the EPCC Trans Mountain Forum at 7:30 p.m. And they wanted to make sure, the School of Music wanted me to make sure to introduce that to you. Also, we do have your Thursday packets ready, and it'll be delivered.
I'll have them just.
It'll be handed out before the meeting is open. Thank you.
Thank you, Doc. Now we'll take us to agenda item 10.
Item 2A, discussion with and receive report from the internal auditor regarding review of transfer credit process, procedures, and student cohort information.
Good evening. Good evening. Board President Rodriguez, board members, and Dr. Murphy. Today I'll be presenting on the report that Tony mentioned. The subject on the report is executive summary and report on the investigation of subpopulations and student cohorts as part of the CHS newcomer admissions process audit. I'll start off with the background section. The CHS newcomer admission process audit was approved by the Board of Trustees through the 2012-2013 audit plan. While conducting the audit, significant findings were found and shared with the Board of Trustees. The Board of Trustees requested that internal audit finalize the investigation related to these significant findings and to present these findings in this limited scope audit report tonight. This report is considered a component of the larger CHS newcomer admission process audit report, which is still in progress and will be issued at a later date. The backup documentation for this audit is within the audit work papers. The scope and objective of this limited scope audit, the objective of this portion of the audit was to determine if student subgroups or subpopulations were being manipulated and to determine if practices were in place to avoid the 10th grade federal accountability year. The scope of the audit included review of relevant system documentation data, source documents, and evidence obtained through interviews. Extensive data analysis was performed to identify trends in grade level reclassifications. Based on this information, a sample of student files was selected for testing to determine the purpose of the grade level reclassifications and to inspect supporting documentation. Email searches were also performed on selected key individuals. Based on the results of the email searches, interview questions were developed and administered. Audit results. Based on interview responses and supporting documentation reviewed, the former CHS principal was directed by the superintendent to avoid a limited English proficiency, also known as LEP subpopulation, and special education director was also directed by the superintendent to avoid a special education subpopulation. Evidence review shows that action was taken to ensure that the subpopulations were not created as directed. The former CHS principal had emails that related to identifying and minimizing subgroups, monitoring these subgroups, and methods on how students could receive accelerated credit during the beginning of their 10th grade and be reclassified as 11th graders at the end of semester one, thus avoiding the 10th grade adequate yearly progress, also known as AYP accountability testing time period, occurring in the spring. According to data analysis performed, approximately 66 students were reclassified out of the 10th grade mid-year. Most reclassifications occurred in the months of December, January, and February during the 2010-2011 school year. According to interview responses from various CHS personnel, mid-year grade reclassifications only occur on the fourth year of high school. It appears that this is a general rule and is not part of policy. During interviews with CHS personnel, the auditors pointed out that many of the changes occurred in years other than the fourth year. The general follow-up response is that the students may have been reclassified in order to catch up with their cohort or maybe gaining credit due to attendance. Further data analysis was then performed to determine whether grade reclassifications were occurring consistently throughout the various grade levels. The data analysis shows that approximately 62% of grade reclassifications that occurred in 2010-11 were students who were reclassified out of the 10th grade. A sample of 53 mid-year grade reclassifications that occurred in 2010-2011 was selected for testing. The audit tests indicate that the majority of the mid-year reclassifications involve changes from the 10th to the 11th grade, the change occurred in the third year of high school, lack documentation to explain the grade reclassification, and lacked approval documentation. At CHS, a plan was also developed in 2011-2012 to promote newcomers from 9th grade to 10th grade in order for these students to take the TAPS test instead of the STAR test. The students' foreign transcripts were reevaluated and additional credits were recommended in order for them to be promoted to the next grade level. It appears that this plan was suspended by the former CHS principal because it would have created a left subpopulation in the 10th grade. It also appears that if the plan had been implemented, it would have resulted in a left subpopulation in 2011-2012. Audit testing was performed to determine whether students were being properly exited from the left status. A sample of 25 exited students was selected for testing. 12 students appear to have been exited properly according to English proficiency criteria set forth by TEA. 5 students exited were lacking adequate documentation. 8 of the students were classified as both SPED and LEP. These students were exited under special criteria set forth in Texas Administrative Code 89.1225K. According to TEA guidelines, Section K should be used in rare cases. This process is to be used to address the needs of an individual student, not groups of students. Very few students qualify to exit using Section K. It appears that the use of Section K is common practice to exit LEP students. According to Section K, the exit of the student is determined by both the Admission Review and Dismissal Committee, also known as ARD, and the Language Proficiency Committee, LPAC. It appears that the exit decision in most cases was made without including the ARD representative. It was noted on a parent evaluation of student progress form that a student did not understand or speak English. However, the student was exited from the program. We also received a written statement from a diagnostician which expresses concerns about students being exited that appear to need services. The special education director stated that a directive was received from the superintendent to avoid the SPED subpopulation at the middle schools. Audit testing performed indicates that actions were taken to avoid subpopulations as directed. According to the special education director, a meeting was held with the superintendent during the spring of 2010. During the meeting, the special education director was asked to develop various options to select from to ensure that a SPED subpopulation was not created in either middle school for 2010-11. The planning document projected that in 2010-11, a SPED subpopulation would be created at Canotillo Middle School if no changes were made. To avoid the creation of this subpopulation at CMS, 3 options were developed. Option 1 was selected because it best met the goal of avoiding the creation of a subpopulation. The option consisted of moving the instructional skills class from CMS to AMS. According to documents provided, it appears that the instructional skills class was moved from CMS to AMS in order to avoid a subpopulation in 2010-2011. AYP reports for both CMS and AMS show that a sped subpopulation was not created for either campus in 2010-2011. Conclusion. Based on the evidence presented above, it appears that the superintendent directed two administrators to avoid subpopulations, and actions were taken by the administrators to ensure that the subpopulations were not created. In addition, many mid-year grade classifications were made to promote 10th graders to 11th graders, resulting in the avoidance of the 10th grade accountability year.
At this point in time, I'll ask any of my colleagues if they have any questions regarding the audit report.
I do. I have tons of them. This is the first I've seen of it, and the first that I have heard this in some type of a readable form, and I have tons of questions, and I'm sure that I will continue to have more questions because they're not answered. I've got questions about who's responsible.
Madam, just real quick, if it has to deal with the personnel issue, of course that's for the next agenda item, but if it's going to have to deal with something that was presented that's not a personnel issue, then it could be asked.
I have questions on number two of your audit results. That 10th grade could be reclassified as 11th grade. Is this good or is that bad for children? If you know that they're not going to be able to pass an extremely rigid and rigorous test, is it a bad thing to make sure that they can go forward? I don't know the answer to that. And I really don't know that anyone does. I question that, and I would like to know more about it because I don't know enough about that. You didn't hold anyone back. You didn't deny them anything. It sounds like maybe you might have helped them. I've never known one job interview that ever asked, did you pass the tax test or the AYP? They all want to know, did you graduate from high school? I see that as a key point. I don't see the timeline of the investigation on here. And I don't see exactly how many years were looked at to get this, to get the report together. Those are questions that I have.
Do you want to have them answer one question at a time?
I don't know. I think I've got so many that...
Well, if you have questions, let's see if we could have them answered.
Okay. Does anybody have an opinion on number three? Is that, was that bad for these children, or was that good that they got to graduate?
Which question would you like to be answered?
Number two. Is it good or bad for children who might not... that they did graduate from high school?
The information that was provided was to show that it was not usual for students to be promoted from one grade level to the next grade level, except for the 10th to the 11th grade. Like we're looking at, and let me pull some statistics that I put together.
I
to take into consideration the first audit result. And so in the first audit result, we have indication there that the superintendent provided directive to limit a subpopulation. And so when that directive is taken into action, we're going to see that 10th graders that are LEF students are being promoted to the 11th grade prior to taking that 10th grade accountability exam. And so in using this information that I have in front of me, I have some statistics related to reclassifications and percentages of reclassification. So we have, and this is for the 2011 school year, 2010-2011 school year. We see that students that were promoted from the 9th grade to another grade, 10th grade or 11th grade, that was only 7%. Students that were reclassified out of the 10th grade, that's either down to the 9th grade or promoted to the 11th or the 12th grade, we see a 62% there. Students that were moved out of the 11th grade, that was 31%. And students that were moved out of the 12th grade, that's only 1%. So we see the large percentage of the students that are being reclassified mid-year is from the 10th grade. And to me, that's an unusual anomaly.
That's a lot. Yeah. Is that in any way due to, and I'm not real familiar with this, mini-mesters, and I want to say our TLC lab that we have that causes children to be able to catch up with their work and their studies when...
That might be a factor. The TLC also, we came across was attendance appeal, and so that may be another factor that would accelerate the students' education. However, when we had interviews with various personnel at the campus, counselors, other personnel, the general rule that they would tell us that they would follow is that students were only reclassified mid-semester when they were at least 4 years in high school. And so the data that we were looking at, most of these reclassifications were occurring on the third year. And that doesn't go with, the explanation that they provided to me.
Okay. That makes that much clearer.
I have a further question on two. Mm-hmm. Are you going to move on to three?
No, go.
Okay, on two, you have the audit and test indicate majority of mid-year classifications that lack documentation to explain the grade classification, reclassification, and lacked approval documentation. Is there a set policy as to how classification takes place?
There is no set policy that I know of within the district or state, regulated guidance. Mm-hmm. And that definitely is something that I think we need to address quickly because we need to make sure that there's a consistent process in making grade classifications.
In other grades, were there approval documentations? Did you look beyond that? Or was it just in 10th and 11th that you saw the majority of them lacking documentation?
We basically selected a sample from 10-11 because that was the
62%.
So we saw a large anomaly there, and that is an audit practice where we develop a risk assessment, and so we determine red flags, anomalies, and then we select testing from that population.
Thank you.
Through the chair, might I bring up a point, President? On July 2nd, Jim Fry sat at that same table and gave a 45-minute presentation regarding this issue and concluded to the board and to the board's satisfaction that things are going well. One of the things that Mr. Fry pointed out...
Doc, would that be legal?
I'd rather not talk about Mr. Fry.
That's a personal issue.
One of the items that occurs at the high school is that the majority of incoming students from out the country normally wind up with between 2 and 3 credits. In 2009-10, we went to a 10-period scheduled day, which is somewhat of an anomaly around the region. There's only a couple of other schools that have it, which allow a student with the double block Algebra 1 to receive 9 credits a year. So an incoming student who is given 2.5 credits then can earn 9 credits in the ensuing year, whereas at a school such as Coronado High School, which has a 7-period day with a double block, they can only earn 6. In Canyatillo, beginning in this time frame that you're auditing, they could earn 9. Thus, at Christmas time of the sophomore year, you had and have students sitting at, in these types of students, sitting at 11.5 credits, whereas in other schools they have less. You only need 12 credits to be into the next grade. And that acceleration opportunity that that 10-period block creates a situation where students accelerate to where mid-year classifications happen at a rate possibly greater than at other schools due to the fact that in that year they can earn up to 9 full credits, as in other schools they can't. And that then accelerated, and might have even accelerated at Canyatillo, because prior to that year we did not have a 10-period block. Those mid-year moves.
Dr. Murphy, when did the 10-period block start?
It started August 2010.
And when did your...
My employment start? January 2010.
Okay. Did you have another... Was that it, Dr.?
No, but I just wanted to point out that in a 10-period block, mid-year acceleration is more common than in a 7-period block. And I think everyone can see that's common sense, because they earn credits quicker.
I have
and it doesn't need to be seen as malfeasance.
Another basic question, Mr. Rodriguez, of going back to one, could you clarify exactly what a subpopulation equals? I mean, I have a pretty good idea, but I think it would be helpful if you could professionally tell us what that equals and why it's a bad thing.
The subpopulation is when the count of the students in a certain category, and let's take LEP for an example, the LEP student count, if it's 50 or more, and 10% of the student of the population that's taking the exam, then that would create a subpopulation. And when the subpopulation is created, then it's almost like a microscope is put on that group. And so I believe it's like 95% of the group would have to pass the exam. And if not, then that would be a negative mark against us.
So it's harder if you have a subpopulation, easier if you don't?
If you don't have a subpopulation, then those students aren't included in that small subset, that small group. And so let's say those students are not doing well academically. Well, the performance, their low performance, is kind of washed out throughout the larger student population.
Okay, I understand. Thank you. Any other questions?
Any other questions, or are you ready to go into personnel?
No, I wanted to ask some other questions on these. There's quite a few personnel questions I have. Let me look through this and see if there's... On 4, bullet 3, that would be on page 2. How many years did you see this happening?
We tested the end of 2010 and the end of 2011. The students that were exiting at the end of 9-10, we tested those to see if there was documentation for the exit of that student also in 2010-11, the end. According to the ALS director, that is when it occurs, when the exit process occurs at the end of the year.
Did you look any other years, to see historically was that always done? Was there any historical?
That was our scope. It was those 2 years.
I would like to see a history on that, what did it look like in 2005, 6, 7, 8, 9, at some longer period to see, is that unusual or is that just the way it's always been? The next part down from that, it doesn't have a bullet, it's like a little subsection of that. You said most cases was made without including the ARD representative. What about the LPAC?
Was represented for the majority of the time, and most did not have an ARD representative.
But they had an LPAC, and LPAC signed off?
If I recall correctly, there were 4 of those that there was only one representative from the LPAC, and there was an additional population where there was the ESL facilitator and campus personnel, and campus personnel could include an administrator, a regular ed teacher. However, for the ones that I'm stating here, that most cases did not include an ARD representative, a special education representative.
And was there a reason?
No.
Just nobody wanted to do it that day, or sloppy work? Was there a directive? Was there anything that caused that to happen, or was it just business as usual?
It's really hard to say because we see differences where we see, 4 that were only signed, and there's an ARD LPAC form that is used to exit, the student from the LEF status. And so we see 4 that only include the ESL facilitator, so those 4 were only made based on her decision, according to the documentation. Other small set, we see a couple more people, and very few, I believe it was 3 or so, where we saw the entire population of the representatives that were supposed to be at this exit meeting actually do it the way that it was supposed to be done.
And did you review with these people why that didn't happen? Why they weren't in attendance, the responsible ones?
We had reports that the administrators didn't want them there. They didn't want them attending from interviews that we did. I think the same point was made to the consultant.
Through the chair, do you have a report that the superintendent asked that only certain members sign certain documents?
No.
Thank you.
And with this one also, I'd like to see if you could expand. Were they always doing that? In 2009 and 2007, was this same thing happening? Was that just business as usual in the way it happened, or was it just particular, that it just started, that those people weren't there and it was something unusual? I'd like to see that expanded as well.
I would like to backtrack for 1 second, if I could, back to the 10 course class. I actually did look at some of the ninth graders. They had the two or three credits after their first semester credits were awarded their freshman year. They had enough credits to be sophomores, and they weren't reclassed. And we saw that quite a bit in our data. So to say that, you know, that just only happened in the 10th grade, well, it was happening in the 10th grade, and the statistics show that the reclasses were being made. The statistics also show they weren't being made at the freshman level. So it's inconsistent.
And was it inconsistently inconsistent?
It was inconsistent.
Okay.
I have a further question on Section K. Section K still says both the ARD and LPAC, correct?
Yes, correct.
So whether there was the pattern of not having both representatives there or an administrator, it was not done correctly. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
On page 3, the first, it's not numbered, but was there an ARD with that? Or an LPAC dismissal?
I'm sorry, what?
It's just the very top paragraph.
Very top of page
3. It's the very first entry.
Okay.
Was there an ARD on this one, or an LPAC discussion?
Yes, there was.
So this one was done properly.
This one has a campus administrator signature. However, the campus administrator signature here is actually instructional coordinator. We don't allow that. There's an ESL facilitator signature. There seems to be a regular education teacher and a special education teacher, and then we have two other signatures here. And so the documentation for this one, it appears that there are more personnel that signed off on this document than in other documents that we saw.
And so, why is that a problem? I don't, if everybody said it's okay, and this is the right thing to do.
Well, I don't know if it's the right thing to do, because we have this note where the parent is saying that when they talk to my daughter in English, she doesn't understand and she doesn't talk. And so, I mean, to me, from the parent note, it's apparent that the student needs, you know, services.
Where were those people who signed off in not hearing that? Or where was the parent in not telling it in
a
time like
that? Actually, afterwards, on the document, we have that, and it's dated June 1st, 2011. And the process that I understand is that after the students are exited from the program, there is an evaluation every 6 weeks. And then this is a parent evaluation form. And so the parent is letting the campus know that, you know, the student does not understand the English language.
And how did the campus then respond?
I don't know.
So I don't understand them, why that particular instance is a problem, I guess is where I'm coming from. If everybody signed off and the procedure was done properly on this one, apparently something went wrong because the parent wasn't heard.
Correct.
And
it's apparent that the student needs services. We also have, if you read the next sentence, where we have a written statement from a diagnostician where she believes that, you know, students are being exited that need these services. And so that's why we included this this comment here, where, you know, the students are being, well, this student in particular is being exited, but it's apparent that the student needs the service.
Would that not then I guess all I'm getting at, would that not be a campus level issue? That if all those people signed off, something, there's something that
yes,
they missed.
Right, exactly.
They didn't listen to the parent. They did not respond once the parent had a problem. Would that be fair to say?
That yes, I mean, to me the evaluation was incorrect.
Okay.
The overall question is, if the student needs a service and they're looking at exiting, then it's a concern.
But the concern to me would be, how did all those people sign off and say, you're okay, you're good to go?
Well, if you look at the first part, and you're looking at where it talks about, you know, based on interview responses supporting documentation, former principal was directed to avoid the limited English proficiency subpopulations. And so,
tell
that's
me
a directive.
Where you're reading from.
On the first page.
First page.
You look at one, mm-hmm. The first sentence on that. The directive's coming from the top to avoid the limited English proficiency subpopulation. And so that's a concern if that's the practice of not serving the students that need to be served to avoid that subpop.
I think it's the whole body, not just individual. Individually, I don't think there may be a lot of problems, but if you look at it, the whole.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then going down to number 5, the third paragraph, is that wrong?
That a plan was created to avoid a subpopulation? I believe so.
But is it wrong because we, let me ask you this. I know that I've had phone calls about special ed over the years and students being served and different services or lack thereof. Is there a possibility that it was truly created, that this group of children were truly put where they were put to create not create a subpopulation instead of being put where they were put to serve them better?
Not when you see this document that was provided to me where the document identifies, you know, the current situation, the projected situation, and then it has 3 different options as to which one to select to make sure that the middle school doesn't have a subpopulation in the next year. And to me, that document, it's evident that, you know, the move was made to ensure that the subpopulation wasn't created. The intent was not to do what was in the best interest for the student. And I'm not saying that this move was not in the best interest of the student, but that was not what that document was all about.
I understand. Yeah. Okay. I understand what you're saying.
So your interview of the special education director essentially said that they received a directive to not create a subpopulation.
Yes.
Through the chair. Auditors, did you find any instances where students were withdrawn from school in an inappropriate way at any grade level?
We did testing related to that. We looked at some withdrawals and we looked for withdrawal forms. Many of them were incomplete. It's very difficult to say. I didn't record it as a condition. A lot of the sections were incomplete, but what I was looking for was a signature from the campus and from the student, and I was okay, you know, with the testing that.
So you found no instances where a student was withdrawn inappropriately?
No.
Did you find any instances where a student was denied enrollment?
No.
None?
None.
Thank you.
And that's not, I mean, we're not saying that those are conditions in this report. The focus on this report was that we were reporting 2 instances where the superintendent directed administrators to avoid subpopulations. And so that's why, Ms. Searles, you'll see that the scope of this particular investigation was time periods tested after that directive was received. And so we wanted to see, were there actions that were taken to avoid subpopulations? And
now let me stop you right there. Dr. Murphy, why would you direct someone to not create a subpopulation?
Well, I'm not saying that I did.
But why would
I was given this report as I sat down at this chair, and I would appreciate the board's patience in giving me some time to look it over. I am flabbergasted at the difference between our July 2nd meeting and this meeting. Steve can direct me to be careful about that. But I am flabbergasted about it, and I would encourage the board to give me some time to look at the two. So I really don't have a comment on that. If you'd like me to speak generally, I think it is important to note that the state has, I mean, we're talking here Canyon TOISD, and in a little broader way, EPISD, but the state recently dropped their sub-pop requirements from 50 to 30, or even lower. Ms. Brigham, what is it, 20 now, 30? Why did the state do that? Why did the state, across the entire state, drop their sub-pop requirement from 50 to 30? Is EPISD and CISD the only districts in the state? What prompted the commissioner to make that move?
I don't think that was the question. I was wondering why, if any, direction would be to control a sub-pop from being created. Speaking generally, why would you create a sub-pop?
Well, we're not
creating
a
sub-pop.
I don't have a specific answer for that without reading this report more fully and going forward.
This was in the middle school? Both middle schools?
Yes, both middle.
But I do find it indicative that the state made that change in that they felt it an issue across the entire state.
When did they change that, Dr. Murphy?
Ms. Brigham?
I'd have to check. I think it was about a year.
Year and a half ago?
The question I would like to ask our auditors is, what is a federal requirement?
Well, the federal requirement is related to the one that I described. It was 50 students or 10% of the testing population.
It's 50%. It's 50 students and 10%.
At middle school.
At all schools.
Yeah. I thought it was at their grade level. Is not what you said?
Correct.
It's at their grade level, because there's no way you can create a sub-pop of 50
and
10% of the entire school.
Right.
50 and 10% for the campus and then also for the district.
For the campus?
The campus level and then 50 and 10% at the district.
The district.
This doesn't make sense. Can you explain 50 and 10%?
Can you clarify that?
50 students, if it exceeds 50 students, then there might be a subpopulation. If it's less than 50 students, then we don't have a subpopulation. If it's more than 50 students, then we have to take into account the 10% rule.
Okay.
Okay. So if there's 630 students in a school, 10% would be 63. But you would need at least 50 and the 10, so you would need 63 students to create a sub-pop. If you had 59 students, you would not have a sub-pop.
Thank you, Dr. Murphy. So what I just heard then was, right now, today, that subpopulation, and help me with this, I don't know if state trumps federal or federal's going to trump state, that we've just heard the subpopulation requirements were dropped from 50% to 30%.
50 students to 30 students.
I'm sorry, 50 students to 30 students. Is that today's requirement?
Yes.
Not sure. I tested 2010-11, and those were the requirements that were in place at that time.
That's a state issue which hasn't been, to our knowledge, already brought. But we still have to address a federal guideline in the NCLB.
But do you understand what I'm asking? Is this, are we today, do we look at the same weight that we looked at in 2010-2011?
Yes. So the federal law changes, and
okay,
NCLB
so the
has
federal
not
law
changed.
Has not changed, but the state law has changed, is what I'm hearing. Okay.
Any other questions? Is there any other questions from the board? If not, I would ask that we go into executive session for personnel issues. There's no questions. And Tony, can you please call us into executive session, and can you please give the reasons why?
The time is now 7:47 p.m. and the meeting is to be closed under Texas Government Code, sections 551074 and 551071 for discussion with and receive advice from legal counsel concerning audit report regarding review of transfer credit process procedures and student cohort information and discussion regarding superintendent's contracting assignment with KNTOISD and related personnel matters.